I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Hurricane Milton plowed into the Atlantic Ocean on Thursday after cutting a destructive path across Florida that spawned more than a dozen tornadoes, destroyed homes, and killed at least five people. But the storm did not trigger the catastrophic surge of seawater that was feared. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
Thankfully, this was not the worst-case scenario.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said that while the storm was not as bad as feared, the damage was still widespread. Milton downed power lines and left more than 3 million homes and businesses without power. Some neighborhoods experienced significant flooding, but the Tampa Bay area appeared to have escaped the storm surge that had prompted the most dire warnings. In St. Petersburg, the roof was torn off Tropicana Field, a staging area for first responders, and a large construction crane collapsed.
Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener. U.S. President Joe Biden is angrily calling out his predecessor for spreading misinformation about the federal hurricane response. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
For days, the White House has admonished Donald Trump and others over false claims, like saying FEMA's assistance is capped at $750. That's actually an immediate need payment for urgent requirements like food and diapers.
They got to stop this. They're being so damn un-American with the way they're talking about this stuff.
Asked if he plans to talk with Trump and urge him to stop.
Are you kidding me?
And then look straight to the TV cameras.
Mr. President Trump, former President Trump, get a life, man. Help these people.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
This is VOA News. A UN peacekeeping mission in Lebanon says Israeli forces fired on its positions on Wednesday and Thursday. Reuters correspondent Trevor Corral reports.
The United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon, or UNIFIL, says two of its peacekeepers were injured when an Israeli tank fired at its main headquarters in Nakura. Israel has been pursuing a widening offensive against Hezbollah in that area. A UN source said there were no casualties in two other incidents. Italy has protested to Israel over the incident. Its defense minister called it illegal and a possible war crime.
Reuters correspondent Trevor Corral. When it began its ground invasion into Lebanon, Israel said its goal was to push Hezbollah back from the border to enable more than 60,000 residents to return to their homes in the north. But since moving into the country, its troops have been making some disturbing discoveries. Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
The Israeli ground troop operation that began last week in southern Lebanon discovered and destroyed a Hezbollah tunnel that crossed into Israel. The Israel Defense Forces says Hezbollah was planning an attack like Hamas's incursion from Gaza that started the war there a year ago. Sarit Zahavi is the founder of the Alma Research and Education Center in northern Israel.
While IDF is now operating inside Lebanon, it had found tons of evidence with tunnels, with vehicles, with equipment.
Zahavi says the four units of IDF ground troops are also searching for and destroying Hezbollah's vast store of short-range missiles. These missiles can be launched from the shoulder of any Hezbollah fighter, and Israel's Iron Dome defense system cannot intercept them. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
The World Wildlife Fund's latest Living Planet report shows wildlife populations globally have dropped nearly 75% in the last 50 years, which it called a catastrophic decline. Reuters correspondent Christy Kilburn reports.
Researchers at the Zoological Society of London compiled the data. Robin Freeman is its head of indicators and assessments.
The combination of climate change, habitat loss, and biodiversity loss are things that we need to get on top of because they're mixed up problems that need to be dealt with together.
But the report says that while the situation is desperate, we have not reached a point of no return. It warns that a massive collective effort will be needed over the next 5 years to tackle the dual climate and nature crises.
Reuters correspondent Christy Kilburn. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The leaders of Egypt, Eritrea, and Somalia meet amid heightened tensions in the Horn of Africa.
The few of them have one main agenda, how to contain Ethiopia. Ethiopia is a problem for Eritrea. Ethiopia is also a big threat to the sovereignty and security of Somalia. And Egypt now comes in as the big brother there to probably give security guarantees.
Prayer camps in Nigeria attract so-called miracle seekers. Residents in some parts of Florida are beginning to survey the damage from Hurricane Milton. We will speak with a Burundian in Tampa, Florida. Sudan's Rapid Support Forces militia leader accuses Egypt of supporting its opponent, the Sudanese military.
Even it's happened that, you know, Egypt supplied them with the airplane, which is possible because this is the military. It's a country, they have their military, and they have the right to buy airplane from anywhere.
And a look at the Christian nationalist streak that runs through the Republican Party. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's thoughts are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The leaders of Egypt, Eritrea, and Somalia met for a three-way summit in Asmara on Thursday against a backdrop of heightened tensions in the Horn of Africa. Edgar Kitua is an international security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, Kenya. He tells VOA's Douglas Mpuga that he thinks the main concern of the three leaders is Ethiopia.
The few of them have one main agenda, how to contain Ethiopia. Ethiopia is their common problem. Ethiopia is a problem for Eritrea. Ethiopia is also a big threat to the sovereignty and security of Somalia. And Egypt now comes in as the big brother there to probably give security guarantees. So that is their common agenda, how they will cooperate from a military perspective, security perspective, and how they are going to protect their shared interests within the region, within especially the Horn of Africa.
You mentioned Ethiopia. Ethiopia seems to have very poor relations with Egypt, with Eritrea, and with Somalia. How does it hope to cope? Though there's no understanding between most of the neighbors.
Yeah, it's going to be a problem for Prime Minister Abiy, because, you know, Egypt does not like what Ethiopia has done on the River Nile, on the Blue Nile, building the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. So that is Egypt's problem with Ethiopia, feeling like Ethiopia wants to start blackmailing or using the River Nile for geopolitical strategizing and maneuvering. Somalia does not like Ethiopia because Ethiopia has proven that it is going to interfere with its territorial integrity by going to make agreements or cut deals with Somaliland, in essence recognizing Somaliland. So Somalia views Ethiopia as a security threat for its survival. And there have been rumors in the region that Prime Minister Abiy is regretting the peace he made with Eritrea, because Ethiopia's desperation to get access to a seaport, they could start relooking at how to colonize or how to attack Eritrea to gain that access. So these three countries have at the heart of their problem Ethiopia and Ethiopia's renewed aggression in the region. And why is Ethiopia doing all this? Ethiopia feels it is a big, powerful country in the Horn of Africa. It feels it should be a regional hegemon. And you cannot be a powerful country and a powerful hegemon if you do not have access to a seaport.
Where is the regional bodies, AU, in all this?
So the problem of AU is one. The member states of the African Union are not united. They don't have singleness of vision and purpose. That simply means that all countries in the African Union, in as much as they claim to adhere or respect the African Union, eventually pursue their own internal interests. None of them really wants to follow or obey the African Union or to do what is expected of them. So you'll find the African Union is almost toothless. The heads of state assembly in the African Union, they do not want to talk about coups, they don't want to talk about bad governance, corruption. It's a big boys club and they all keep quiet. And why they will not interfere is because they fear what the Sahel have done, what Burkina Faso, Mali and Niger have done, declaring that they are no longer members of the African Union. So the African Union is blackmailed by its member states that if you disturb us, if you interfere with what we are doing, we are going to renounce our membership, we are going to quit the African Union.
Edgar Kitua is an international security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi. He spoke from Nairobi with my colleague Douglas Mpuga. This week, the leader of Sudan's Rapid Support Forces, RSF, militia, accused Egypt of supporting its opponent, the Sudanese military, Lieutenant General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Himeti, said in a video message that the development marks an escalation of the conflict. Egypt has denied the accusations. Hussein Shingraya is the Foreign Affairs Secretary of the People's Democratic Party of Sudan. He tells me that Himeti may be trying to blame his apparent defeat in the conflict on other countries.
It's just an allegation, as you said, because even if you look at his speech, he talked about first, you know, Egypt supplied Sudan with different type of airplane. And then he come and talk again about that. The Egyptian, they use their own plane and pilots to strike Jebel Moya. Which one is right? They supply them with airplane or they did that by themselves? And I don't think Egypt is going to be involved in something like that because the Sudanese, they have many pilots, they have many airplanes, and even it's happened that, you know, Egypt supplied them with the airplanes, which is possible, could happen because this is the military. It's a country, they have their military, and they have the right to buy airplane or get airplane from anywhere. But I don't think right now Egypt is involved because they are, you know, holding a peace agreement negotiation and everything. They work as to get this war stopped.
But there is some evidence that Egypt has been supporting the Sudanese army.
If Egypt, they want to do that, they will do that first time when the war starts, because at that time, they have the right to do that, because you remember when the Hemeti took, you know, the hostage from Egyptian army in Marawi airport, while at that time they just have a training down there. At that time, if Egypt want to act, then they can act at that time, and they have the right to do that because their pilots have been taken from Marawi and they came for the training at that time before the war. I think he is trying just to drag, you know, many countries in this war and try to show the world that why he's being defeated. And he talked about the supplying the Sudanese army with weapons from Iran and from different countries. Okay, this is an army. Then what is about you, your militia? Who is supplying you? From where you get all those, you know, very developed weapons? Even the Sudanese army, when they compensate those weapons, they never see it before. They don't know how to use it even. Why we don't, you know, look at that instead of just looking at the Sudanese army? That's an army. They have the right to do that as the countries to defeat themselves.
We understand that Hemeti made this speech. It's a recorded speech. Do we know where he is right now?
If he is still alive, but what we think and what we saw, and most of the Sudanese, they think that he was dead, and what is happening now is just, you know, it's kind of computer technology or all those things just to keep his army, you know, holding, because if they know that he's being killed, then they will probably, they're going to leave the battle war. But the only thing we can say out of this speech is he admitting that he is losing.
Hussein Shingraya is the Foreign Affairs Secretary of the People's Democratic Party of Sudan. He was speaking with us from the U.S. state of Maryland. The power of simple prayer to heal illness is not clear, according to scientists, and is also difficult to study. And whatever your faith, when you are sick, you should seek treatment from a doctor. But in Nigeria, some people are choosing spiritual healers and miracle cures over Orthodox medicine and hospitals. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
3 years ago, Immaculate Joshua's left breast turned sore and discharged blood. She suspected it was cancer, but she didn't go to a doctor. She says she instead visited various spiritual healing homes known as prayer camps, and the pain eventually went away.
I refused to go to hospitals to others and believe in God. I called one of my spiritual father. He said I should use salt and warm water. When I used it up to then, nothing happened to me. I didn't sick again.
This wasn't the first time Joshua had visited prayer camps. She's been relying on them for years to fix many family problems. And right now, she's hoping they will heal her husband's blindness.
I believe that God will do it. When his appropriate time comes, you can't force God or you can't rush to God.
Nigeria has the second highest rate of daily prayer in the world, according to the Pew Research Center, with about 95% of the population praying daily. But health experts here worry that some citizens are trying to pray away illnesses and refusing to seek medical care until it is too late. According to the World Population Review, Nigeria had the 15th highest mortality rate in the world in 2023. And some health officials worry that the reliance on unproven spiritual remedies is making it worse. Dr. Ejike Orji is a public health expert in Nigeria.
Spiritual beliefs and practices are already deeply rooted, and often people prioritize them over conventional science-based medical treatment. So is a major issue in Nigeria.
Christian pastors like Mike Michaels are trying to bridge the gap between prayer and medicine, telling their followers that the two should work together.
So there is that balance. The problem is when you see medicine in itself as able to heal you outside of God, and I think that's where the issue is. Medicine is provided by God because God is the master scientist.
Michael says despite the perception, many churches like his are trying to set the record straight.
We've reached out to several people. We've done medical outreaches, helped people to get them free glasses, done rapid tests for malaria and some other sicknesses.
According to the World Bank data, in 2021, about 4% of Nigeria's total gross domestic product went to healthcare spending. In contrast, that same year, it was over 10% in the European Union and over 16% in the U.S. The lack of government investment makes healthcare expensive for many Nigerians, and so, in many cases, prayer may be the only option. Timothy Obiezu, VOA Africa, Abuja, Nigeria.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, October 11th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Hurricane Milton left behind widespread destruction as it crossed Florida on Wednesday as a dangerous Category 3 storm, the second time in 2 weeks that southeastern state was hit by a powerful hurricane. VOA's Richard Green has the latest.
Milton made landfall Wednesday night along Florida's west coast near the city of Sarasota, carrying maximum sustained winds of 205 kilometers an hour. The winds ripped the fabric that covers the roof of Tropicana Stadium, the home of Major League Baseball's Tampa Bay Rays franchise. The hurricane's strong winds and heavy rains triggered high levels of water that flowed from the Gulf Coast into low-lying areas of the cities of Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Fort Myers. Milton also spawned at least 24 tornadoes that crisscrossed the state well before the hurricane made landfall. Authorities say several people were killed by the tornadoes, including one that struck an upscale community near the city of Fort Pierce. More than 100 homes were destroyed, including that of Fort Myers resident Connor Farron.
This happened like instantaneously. Like these windows blew out. I was about probably right here when it happened. My cat over there on the desk, I grabbed the two dogs and like run under my bed. But that was it. Probably 1 minute total. Probably less.
Authorities say at least 2 million residents were left without electricity. The National Hurricane Center downgraded Milton to a Category 1 storm early Thursday morning as it made its way across central Florida. Forecasters warned of devastating rains and damaging winds throughout the day before the storm exits into the Atlantic Ocean. Richard Green, VOA News.
Residents in some parts of Florida are beginning to survey the damage from Hurricane Milton, which tore through parts of the state on Wednesday and early Thursday. The latest reports say at least 14 people have died from the Category 3 hurricane. Hila Ndaganzoa is a Burundian and an operations senior project manager at Power Design Incorporated in Tampa, Florida.
My family and I, we are okay. We spent a tough night. It was rough. I never heard so loud wind with so high speed. It was was terrifying. It was, you know, everybody was scared. But thanks be to God, we survived. And we don't have personal damages. We have debris everywhere.
Could you describe the level of destruction in your area in Tampa?
I really don't know very much because we are still home. We are not allowed yet to, you know, to drive around except for 2 years from authorities. And also, the authorities are still assessing the damages and anything aftermath. But when I look around me, what I see, like in my neighborhood, I don't see much damages than debris, like trees fell down. I have my neighbor who had like two big oak trees. They fell. Fortunately, they did not reach the house.
According to report now announcing that four people were killed by Hurricane Milton, are there any casualties in your area?
So far, we have not heard much. We know the four people who died were killed by a tornado because they say this Hurricane Milton had record, you know, the number of tornadoes which touched the ground. Also, I saw like a lot of houses, a lot of tunnels, like tunnels on the road, you know, signage on the road, which, you know, now are on the ground. So by the end of the day, we're going to hear a lot of casualties and a lot of damages. But so far, because they are still assessing and the roads are closed, we don't know much.
The authorities are telling residents.
They're telling us to stay home, to stay where we are, if somebody evacuated, not to go back yet, especially in the Pinellas County, which includes St. Petersburg and the Clearwater, Palm Harbor. For example, like the Bay Bridges, like I-275, 60, and also the Sky Bridge, they are closed. I don't know if they opened them yet, but they were saying they're going to remain closed until they finish cleaning up the debris and everything on the roads. So, yeah, we are staying home.
Ilao Ntagazwa is a Burundian and Operations Senior Project Manager at Power Design Incorporated in Tampa, Florida. He spoke with reporter Frederick Kundikije of VOA Central Africa Service. There is a significant group of U.S. voters who believe one religion should dictate the nation's laws, but that notion is a divisive issue between liberals and conservatives, Democrats and Republicans. VOA senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Prisitui tells us about Christian nationalism.
Two rallies, two different views.
Giving Jesus a standing ovation.
This is the Rally for Democracy, supporting all religions. This one is the Reawaken America Tour.
Jesus is my savior. Donald Trump is my president.
Now in its third year, the tour supports Christian nationalism, the idea that the United States is a Christian country and should have laws reflecting that. Diane Bollinger is buying souvenirs during a break at the rally.
I will gladly be a Christian nationalist, because what can you say against Christianity? And they talked about, I'm following the God of love, following my life after Jesus, and I love my country. MAGA, make America great again. What is wrong with that?
Nothing, says Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump.
Together we're warriors in a righteous crusade to stop the arsonists, the atheists, globalists, and the Marxists, and that's what they are. And we will restore our republic as one nation under God with liberty and justice for all.
Patty Kinsinger is a Pennsylvania voter.
Our country was built on the Christian and Judeo values and principles. That's how they wrote the Constitution.
America's Constitution does not mention Christianity. Instead, it grants freedom of religion. The Declaration of Independence says rights are provided by a creator and mentions, quote, nature's God.
Father, we thank you for pastors of America.
Still, ministers at the Reawaken America tour take an oath to preach voting for godly candidates. Democrats say that's a violation of the constitutional separation between church and state, like Mary Jo O'Rourke, a Democrat from Montana.
The ministers out there really need to look and talk to their congregations about what it means to have liberty and justice for all.
Others at the Rally for Democracy agree, and some call for a debate on the teachings of Jesus, like Reverend Jim Wallace from Georgetown University.
What did he say? What did he do?
because this kind of message that is wants to attack immigrants and will cause most suffering to the poor and vulnerable is literally a movement that is anti-Christ.
Add to that the abortion debate.
And let us all agree, one does not have to abandon their faith or deeply held beliefs to agree the government should not be telling her what to do.
A Pew Research survey found nearly half of all Americans think the Bible should have an influence on U.S. laws. But the same survey found few think Christianity should be named the nation's official religion. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with results from match day 3 of the 2025 CAF Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers as 48 competing national teams battle for qualification. West Africa football powerhouse Ghana started again as they were held to a 0-0 draw by Sudan at the Accra Sports Stadium on Thursday. The Black Stars now sit third in Group F with just 2 points from 3 matches. Botswana secured a vital 1-0 away win over Cape Verde in Group C on Thursday, thanks to an early goal by Tumisang Oribonye. The win lifts Botswana to 3 points, tying them with Cape Verde, who have also accumulated 3 points from 3 games. Egypt tops the group with 6 points from 2 matches, while Mauritania with 1 point will play Egypt on Friday, hoping to close the gap. DR Congo maintained their perfect record in Group H with a narrow 1-0 victory over Tanzania at the Stade de Martyrs, thanks to a second-half own goal by Clement Mzize. Zimbabwe clinched a crucial 1-0 victory over Namibia, while Algeria extended their Group E lead with a commanding 5-1 victory over Togo on Thursday. More matches are expected to be played on Friday and Saturday. In table tennis news, the ITTF Africa Championship 2024 is expected to take place in Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia, from the 12th to the 19th of October 2024. Egypt and Nigeria are the traditional powerhouses of table tennis on the African continent, taking the 7 crowns between them. From 2017 to 2022, the two teams won all 28 titles on offer, until the run was finally broken last year by Madagascar winning the men's doubles. Africa's best ranked player, Aruna Quadri, can become the first player to win 4 singles titles at the African Championships. And now to rugby, where the 26th edition of the Safari Sevens kicks off on Friday at the Kenyatta Stadium in Machakos. This is the first time the Premier International Sevens Tournament is being held outside Nairobi, and also the first time matches will be played over 3 days. The main tournament features 10 teams, while the final will be held on Sunday. Kenya Sevens will launch their title defense against the Lions rugby team from United Kingdom in Pool A on Friday. In basketball news, the National Basketball Association has committed to building 1,000 basketball courts in Africa over the next 10 years. NBA's Deputy Commissioner and Chief Operating Officer Mark Tatum said the NBA, through NBA Africa, was keen to create spaces where boys and girls can access more opportunities to play basketball. Mike Tatum noted that currently, 10% of the NBA players, around 50 of them, have roots in Africa. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, October 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
Hello, this is Linoch Mudu, host of Health Chat. Join me for the latest in health news, wellness tips, medical breakthroughs, and much more.
Our experts inside the United States and beyond will share some insights on living a healthy life. Tuesdays at 17:30 UTC.